Welcome to the All Things Real Estate Podcast with our very own Josh Barker. With more than 20 years of experience and over 5,000 properties sold, Josh brings a unique perspective to the real estate market. Let's get started.
Okay. It's December 2023. Man, that sounds crazy to say that loud. The end of 2023 already.
It's pretty crazy.
Feels like it's like March of 2023. So it's December of 2023. We're about to go into 2024. Sitting here with the last podcast of the calendar year.
Good.
Right?
Yeah.
And the big news that just hit was that there's an interest rate drop.
Yeah, this month has been, it's been interesting. Rates right now are averaging like 6.62%.
It's down up 1+%, right? Like it,
We peaked at 8.
Okay, I was going to say.
And then about a month ago, we were probably around 7.5%. So right now at 6.62, it's getting really close to that 6.5 mark. And so, you know, this kind of ties into what we were talking about before, which is, you know, we anticipate the interest rate environment's going to be a little bit lower going forward. And, you know, you got to ask yourself the question, when, you know, if you had the choice, would you rather buy when the prices were a little lower and the rate was higher?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Or would you rather purchase on the other side of that would be do you want to purchase when the rate is lower, but the price is a little higher?
Yeah. No.
You know, and given the option between the two, folks right now that are purchasing right now, with the interest rates being a little bit higher, you know, they're probably already thinking about that refinancing option that just became available to them, right?
Yeah.
Which is pretty exciting. So, yeah, it's going to. You know, it's going to be interesting to watch over the next several months what this does to the market.
So, and not only did they lower the rate, but is it just rumor or is it they said, hey, look, we're going to lower the rate more in 2024? Is that like a sure thing?
Well, the Federal Reserve met just a few days ago and they came out and they said that they anticipate that they'll lower the rates 3 separate times next year.
That's big.
It is big. And when you think about that, it doesn't mean they're going to raise it or lower it by a quarter point at a time. I mean, they could go in and just drop it half a point if they wanted to as one of the times that they would do it. You know, I kind of study this a little bit because I'm always trying to figure out, you know, in the commercial real estate space and on the residential side, okay, you know, forecasting for the following year. I mean, running a larger company, obviously, you have to be thinking about those things, you know, versus being, you know, a smaller team or something where you don't have to worry about it as much. I mean, exactly. For us, I have to do a lot of forecasting.
Yeah.
And right now I'm looking at the federal deficit and obviously it's, in the 30 trillion range, but most importantly, what's coming due next year is really around that 6.5 to 8 trillion, somewhere in that range. And when that happens, they're going to be refinancing that debt at whatever that rate is at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they originated that debt, it was probably sitting around 3.8% on average. Currently, if they were refinancing it today, it would be around 5.25%. So you would almost have $100 billion increase in liability monthly or payments that you'd have to make on the interest
alone.
That's
insane.
It's insane. So not to overcomplicate a podcast, but you know, likely if you had control over the interest rates, which obviously the Federal Reserve does,
mm-hmm.
and you were about to have to refinance some of your debt, would you refinance it while the rate was higher, or would you go ahead and adjust the rate down and then refinance it?
Adjust the rate down, man.
Yeah.
$100 billion just in interest. And were you going to say $100 billion a month?
Yeah, it's an interest payment.
So correct me if I'm wrong, is that $1.2 trillion difference per year in interest alone, right?
Well,
did I do that math right?
No, $100 billion a month? I'm going to be careful of that. I don't know for sure if that's right, but I know it's $98 billion increase in interest on that.
Okay.
So it's
A ton of money.
It's still a ton
of money.
I think for the length of that renewable for 1 to 2 years, right?
I was going to say that's crazy.
Yeah, because it's only for that. You know, because this is short term interest rate debt that we're talking about.
Yes.
You know, so they can't even sell this to somebody else because it's too short term. They're carrying it, and so when that money comes back and it's due, they only have a couple options. They can reissue the debt again at whatever the rate environment is, which again they control, so they could bring it down. Or they could print money and pay off a portion of that. But, of course, that causes inflation.
Which we just pulled out. Yeah.
Yeah. And they'll probably do a little bit of one, which would be to probably print some money to deal with some of it. And then they're probably going to refinance a lot of it at whatever that rate is. And so, you know, when you do the math on it, you're like, they're going to bring the rates down.
Have to.
And there's just, you know, and that's going to be a positive thing for the mortgage market because, you know, if the rates go down, that also trickles into the 30-year mortgage. So folks right now that, you know, several months ago were paying 7.5%, 8%. They're probably paying 6.5% here in the next 30, 60 days.
Nice.
You know, don't quote me to it, but that's what I think could happen. And then if you go into next year, if they continue to do this, which we anticipate they will, it you could see rates again in the mid 5% range, pretty easy.
Which is just going to spark the housing market, because all the people that are like, hey, I can't afford that house at 8%. Wait, I can afford that house at 5.5%.
Yep.
Because that's 2.5%. You said what? 1% is 10%.
Yeah, for every 1%, for every 1% the rate goes up or down, it has an impact on a buyer's purchasing power by about 10%.
Okay.
You know, so let's say I'm qualified right now to buy a home, or I should say a few months ago, I was qualified to buy a home when the rate was 7.5%. Let's say I was qualified to buy a house at $400,000. Mm-hmm. Well, if the rate drops to 6.5%, I'm now qualified to buy a home at $440,000. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everybody thinks, well, that means I can just buy a bigger house. It's like, well, yes and no, because the people that you were in the market with that were also qualified at 400,000, they also, with the rates going down, they're also going to be able to pay a little bit more too. And so the hard part about this is that, and we've talked about it on previous podcasts, is that lowering the rate by 1 or 2% isn't necessarily going to, you know, solve a problem, because it's likely just to cause the housing market, home pricing to appreciate right now. Mm-hmm. It would have to get down into likely or between 4 and 5% interest before you have folks that are sitting on 3% interest rates going, you know what, it's close enough to what we have now. We want a bigger home, or we want a smaller home, or we want a newer home, or whatever the reason is, and be willing to relinquish that 3% rate, and then, you know, be willing to accept a 4 to 5% rate. We're not going to be there right now.
I was talking to a friend the other day that he's moving back to Reading. He moved away a few years ago, and they didn't care for it so much. Mm. But he said something interesting. He said, yeah, we're buying this house, and we're assuming the loan that the seller has a loan.
Sure.
And I said, oh, wow, that's awesome. And he's like, yeah, the rate's 3.2%. And right. I was like, oh, wow, if you are thinking about selling your home and you've got that rate, and I don't understand like what looms are loans are assumable.
Right.
Well, I mean, you know how much more you can get for your home versus somebody that was like, well, I want to buy that house, but I was definitely at 8% or even at 6.6%.
Yep.
And they can assume the loan at 3.2%.
Yeah.
That's huge.
It is huge. There's a few opportunities, and even in our local market, where that's the case. So if you look over the last 24 months, I mean, the average sales price obviously has gone up, mm-hmm. But it hasn't gone up significantly. And so if you had somebody that bought a house, let's say 18 months ago on an FHA loan, and their rate at that time might have been, I'm just guessing here for the purposes of the conversation, but let's say it was like 4%,
okay,
or 3.5 to 4%.
Sure.
Now, the situation with them is that if they wanted to, they could allow somebody to assume their mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that buyer would simply come in and pay the difference between whatever they want to sell the home for and what the loan amount is.
Yes,
they would come in with that amount of money, right? And then they could assume the existing loan, and to assume it, they would still have to basically, apply as if they were getting a loan. And so they'd have to show their credit, their, you know, work history and employment, all the things you'd normally need for qualifying for a loan in the first place. But that process is happening a lot. So, or it can happen. The FHA is one. So if you have an FHA loan, that's an opportunity to look at having an assumption done. A VA, although in some cases you may or may not want to, because you may be, you know, relinquishing your VA benefit if you're the veteran, right?
Got it.
But that's another one. And in some cases, case by case, conventional loans, but and those you have to dive in a lot closer, because there's many, many conventional loans where they don't have the ability to assume those loans.
Sure.
And so you just have to know.
You have to talk to your lender.
Yeah, you look at the type of loan that you got initially and go from there. But it is another tool or another instrument that people can use.
Yeah. No, I just thought that the value of your home, so that, let's say there's two homes for sale, mm-hmm. and one of them has an assumable loan. Let's say identical homes, okay, same neighborhood, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And they would both go to the market for, let's say, $400,000.
Okay.
One of them has an assumable loan at even 4%,
yep.
and the other doesn't. The assumable loan home is going to could get more money for their home than the non-assumable loan.
Oh, sure, they could.
Because their loan payment, because that's what it's real, what you're really talking about is the payment. So you take the two homes that are completely identical, both, you know, $400,000, but you say, what's my payment at 4% versus what's my payment at 6.62%?
That's right.
So the person with the assumable loan can go, well, I think my home's actually worth $420,000.
Yeah.
And the payment's still going to be lower than the neighbor at $400,000 because you have to get the loan at 6.62.
Yes. However, it takes a little bit longer to do the assumption loan itself. So you'd have to have a buyer that doesn't have the same time constraints, because it's not a fast process to assume a loan either. It's not cut and dry. It does take some time. On average, it could take you about 90 days to just facilitate an assumption of a loan.
But if somebody is thinking about it, they can call in to you and you guys can look at it and tell them whether or not, or you can connect them with the lender.
Oh, yeah, we've done them now. I mean, currently over the last couple of years, we've done several transactions where the buyer was able to purchase the home and assume the existing mortgage that was on it. It was an FHA loan in that case, or both cases when those happened. And so they came in with the difference between the purchase price of the house and what the loan amount was, and they came in as that was their down payment, and then they assumed the existing loan.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, it was great. It saved them probably 2% or so on the mortgage rate based on what the rate was today and what it was when that original loan that they assumed was issued. So just a good situation. But if you go, you know, if we look bigger picture though, I mean, the question I think a lot of buyers are asking is like, okay, well, now that rates are going down, what does this mean? You know, and I would say most experts right now are projecting that rates going down by 1-2% in the short term is likely going to cause the housing market to increase in value.
Yes.
Or I should say increase in cost. Value is speculative because you have inflation. But
well, it's also going to depend on the markets. You know, the markets that are overbuilt, like we've talked about this before, I think I saw where Boise and Austin are examples of where, you know, a lot of people were moving there and they just went crazy with building. Mm-hmm. And so then all of a sudden the interest rates went up and they're sitting on inventory.
Yeah.
You don't have that in Reading, and you're not going to have that for quite some time, because we don't even have, to my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't see any large projects even in the early phases. It's kind of like everybody kind of slowed down and put a halt on building.
I think, you know, D.R. Horton, which is one of the larger home builders in town, they're sitting on quite a bit of inventory.
Oh, really? Or,
yeah, vacant lots available
to
construct. And so, and there's builders in town, too, that are local as well that have those lots, although they're not really in the process of proactively building right now. But here's a statistic that's interesting. I just read a recent report where it stated that for every 1% that the mortgage interest rate goes down, that it actually increases the number of buyers that who could purchase by 8 million nationally.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so when you bring the rate down by 1%, you're essentially inviting more buyers into the market. Now, the challenge that we have—
Demand going up,
and right now we have a challenge. Inventory is at 550.
Supply is down.
Supply is
down. Day one of economics class.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep. So right now you've got home inventory sitting at 550 homes for sale. You have interest rates that are going down. It's likely that the homes that are on the market today will have higher demand for them because the rates have gone down. It's really going to get interesting as whether or not the Federal Reserve decides to pull out a scalpel next year and to carefully construct a mortgage purchasing plan where they might buy mortgage-backed securities, let's say at 4-5%. Mm-hmm. If they did that, what it could do is it could cause, again, like I said earlier, those people with the lower interest rates to bring their homes to the market. And that could really help to supply the housing market. Because when you talk about inflation, it gets kind of interesting. Inflation, one of the larger components of inflation for core inflation is housing, is shelter cost.
Yeah.
I think it's 30%. Don't quote me on that, but I think it's about 30% of the overall core inflation number is housing and shelter cost. Right now, rents are really holding, and in some markets, they're actually going up. And it's because, you know, the inventory is low. There's not a lot to choose from. A lot of people are sitting on 3% mortgages. So they're like, well, I can't buy a house right now. So, and the rates are a little too high. So I'm going to go rent.
I was talking to, at the Christmas party the other night, they were talking about our kids are in college. And one of them was saying how much they were paying, their daughter was paying for rent in Sacramento.
Yep.
And she said she's paying $1,600 a month to share a one-bedroom apartment with another person paying $1,600 a month.
Wow.
And I was like, what?
Wow.
That's insane. That's Sacramento. That's not Manhattan.
Yeah.
That's not downtown San Francisco.
Right.
So, I mean, because I'm a completely in, we've talked about this before, like some of the things you've talked about is the national level, which I don't plug into because I'm like, there's too many factors, right?
Sure.
I'm just a much more hyper-localized.
Sure.
So I'm like, you know, looking at rents here, looking at inventory, and that blew my mind.
Let's shrink it up here for a minute then. Let's touch that. So an average, according to rentdata.org, a three-bedroom, two-bath, about 1,500 square feet with a two-car garage is going to average around $2,000 to $2,100 a month.
In Reading.
Proper. Correct.
Okay.
That is still, at this point, a price that's more competitive than if you were to buy that home right now with the interest rates, which is why the rental market right now is so tight. I mean, the property managers are telling us that their vacancy rates are around 6%, but that's really accounting for units that you just got back and you're remodeling, replacing carpets, painting, and then turning them back over to the rental market again. So you're going to have some vacancy just from the normal, you know, transition. The new home market, when these rates come down, I think they're probably the biggest winners in the short term. So like if I look at interest rates right now of going down 1%, that's not really going to help replenish the housing market with resale homes. Mm-hmm. It's going to help builders.
Got it.
Because builders now are going to be like, all right, great. We have a few more buyers that can come into the market now that weren't there before. You know, let's say I'm a home builder that my lowest priced product is $420,000.
Which is about as entry level for a brand new home in Reading as you could possibly get.
I totally agree.
That's pushing the limit.
Totally agree.
Downwise.
That's right. But let's say 2 months ago, the average there was buyers that were there that were at $385,000. They just couldn't quite get there because mm-hmm. of what they qualify for. Mm-hmm. Well, when that rate just dropped, now those folks are qualified for that home.
Got it.
And that helps that home builder go, great, I've now sold another property, and now I can, you know, take those funds and start to build another one. And we're going to see that here locally. I think that, again, the rates dropping 1% to 2% in the short term would be tough on housing in terms of appreciation because it could cause more appreciation in the housing market, but it would help builders.
Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, there's a couple of different headlines that I've read, you know, that one of them was the iBuyers. They were talking about trying to put legislation in place to not let the iBuyers, or not necessarily the iBuyers, but these
institutional.
Yeah, Berkshire Hathaway, yeah. BlackRock. And I thought, like, well, you kind of missed the boat because they're probably not going to do it now. They had the foresight when interest sure. rates were at 2.8, 3.2 to say, gobble up as much inventory as you can because, you know, the cost of money is going to go up. Yeah. And so these assets are going to highly appreciate. So they're not, I don't think they're probably not really in the market right now buying houses at 6.62%.
No.
So kind of passing the law now is like totally after the fact. You know what I mean?
I totally agree.
Yeah. But I saw that where they were trying to say, okay, cause they were such huge buyers.
Yep.
So I wonder what their long-term strategy is for relinquishing that inventory. Are they waiting for interest rates to maybe come down a little bit and then they start selling? Like, I wonder, do you know anything like any of these, what is their strategy? Is this like a 5-year hold and let go? Or is this like, no, this is forever or what?
Well, if you take a company like BlackRock, for example, you know, and some of the information they put out there forthright, and they have chosen in some cases to take some of their profits, you know, and liquidate some of their assets mm-hmm. and re-index the portfolio a little bit. But, you know, they run everything through algorithms. You know, so for them, they literally ran an algorithm on it, I'm sure, you know, probably 3 or 4 years ago and said, you know, the best play we could do right now is going to be to go buy real estate. They started that before COVID, though. I mean, that they were already buying in larger metropolitan markets.
Yeah.
They were already buying when rates were at 4.5%. They'd already decided that real estate was the best play.
Well, before COVID hit, I'm trying to remember the guy's name. He was a famous guy. We had talked about this in one of our earlier episodes. But I listened to him. He was brought on in like Morgan Stanley, Bear Stearns, or whatever. I can't remember. These companies are always merging and whatever. But he came on there and they had him come in and talk, and he said, hey, look, let me show you all the data. This would have been probably 2019, mm-hmm. where he said, hey, we're going to have a serious inventory housing shortage, and there's going to be a tremendous pressure. And he basically said the 2008 crisis wiped out so much inventory builders from building inventory at a normal pace that it was, you know, the pendulum was going to swing. So what was happening was based on just birth rates or what have you, the idea was that we were going to have a housing shortage. And this was before the 2.something%. So I'm sure they were looking at that data saying, okay, housing shortage, that's that, you know.
We knew that in 2012 though.
Okay.
Yeah. So I mean, that was because we saw all the new construction essentially
stop,
like you said, right? Oh. And unfortunately, you liquidated your best asset, which was the people that were building those homes. Mm-hmm. They went into other vocations. I mean, they in our local market, they went to oil fields up in the north.
Yeah,
you know,
the Dakotas.
I mean? Yeah. I mean, they did some, you know, some things and left the area in some cases to stay busy or and find different work. I mean, they changed vocations altogether. Even in our local town, we have police officers that were in the construction field, you know, back in those days, right?
Yeah.
And so you think about it and you go, okay, well, you've liquidated your most precious asset, which was your labor.
Mm-hmm.
And now if in the way the world is today, a lot of these kids, you know, they're not too attracted to the thought of, you know, working in 100-degree weather, you know, putting on the bags and climbing on a roof anymore too, right?
No,
so,
yeah.
So it's so because you liquidated that asset, that precious asset back then, now you have nobody that's kind of inspiring anybody else to get involved in it. You know what I mean? So yeah, you've got a labor shortage there. Although it's soft at the moment because obviously with interest rates being higher and us being on, you know, a downward side of, I think of a cycle, if you will. But that's just going to swing back the other way. We have, well, look at the other thing, like over the last 3 years, I don't know what our immigration is, whether you know, it's legal or illegal. It doesn't matter. They're here.
I think it's been going down. I think it's negative. Right. I think we're right. Don't we have negative immigration? I don't know.
It's definitely not.
Channels negative. I watch say it's negative.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I have a feeling that it's probably sitting somewhere around 18 million, you know, somewhere in there that's immigrated into the country. And again, it doesn't matter whether it's legal or illegal.
They have to be housed. They have to be fed. They need services, infrastructure, right? Yeah. That's infrastructure needs to exist.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. Exactly. Not politics.
Not politics. Yeah. Talking about economics of, hey.
Demand. Demand. Demand is going up.
Demand's going up.
Yeah.
And all the indicators are pointing towards it. So, you know, that's where it's at. I mean, when you look at housing right now, and you look at a historical perspective, I mean, it's been at a 45 degree angle or steeper for a really long time.
Yeah.
And I don't see anything, at least in the short term, that's going to change that. I mean, you could argue birth rates, I guess, in the future.
That's going to take quite some time.
Well, we immigrated last year. I mean, normally it takes 19 years to raise an 18-year-old. You know, that's how long it takes normally, right? And have somebody that goes out on their own and participates in the housing market. Well, you just brought in a massive amount of people who a lot of them are already 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have to wait all those years.
Mm-hmm.
That demand is today, which is going to be interesting how we accommodate it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a California thing, but it's a United States thing.
Well, that's
thing,
a U.S. thing.
Yeah. It's a U.S. thing, but I think California is going to feel, I think California is going to feel it more than Wyoming. Let's put it that way.
Well, sure. I mean, because, yeah. Well, their infrastructure in Wyoming isn't going to be as close enough to accommodate it, right?
That's what I mean. The pressure is going to be here.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's got to. So I think back to how we started this, interest rates going down is just going to, I think people that were selling their home, they're going to get a lot more for it this year now if they've got a green light.
I wouldn't use the word a lot. I don't want to give the wrong perspective there because I still think
more than zero.
Yes, and interest rates are going to play into it, right? I mean, so well, look, if
think
the
about
rates,
what you said about the builder.
Yeah.
385, now they can buy at 420. To me, $40,000 is a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
I don't drive a Bugatti, so $40,000 is a lot of money. Yeah, so that's what I meant by a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's going to go up. I mean, it's highly likely. If rates go down, and unless you bring supply on the backside of that,
mm-hmm.
If rates go
which
down,
which is so hard to bring,
it's really hard to bring it
outside.
And we've talked about how you'd have to do it. I mean, it'd be great to get what we call multiple leg transactions moving again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where I own a home in town, I decide I want a different home, I put my existing home up for sale, I go buy another home. So I'm taking a home out of the inventory, but I'm also providing one.
Yeah,
right. That works great. But that's not what's happening right now. What's happening right now is a lot of those folks don't want to put their home on the market. And so the only people we're having is family formation is contributing to it right now,
mm-hmm.
right, to the demand side.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe people relocating into the area.
Also known as immigration.
Immigration, right, whether it you know, be from another area in the state or what have you, but they're coming into the area.
Sure.
But they're not relinquishing a piece of inventory locally. They're only taking a piece of inventory.
It's a game of what's the game with the music and the chairs? Musical chairs, I think. If only they had a name for it.
Well, it's harder when you're not giving up a home, right?
Yeah.
And so that's where the pressure is right now on the supply side where, you know, and I think most buyers in the market today that are shopping are going, man, it's hard to find a good home. But I think there's some hope ahead. It'll be very interesting. Like I said, I don't mean to repeat myself too many times on this, but I would love to see the Federal Reserve pull out a scalpel. Wouldn't it be great if they came out and said, owner-occupied, purchasing a home, will buy the mortgage-backed security for an owner-occupied home at between 4% and 5%. If they if they did that, you keep investors out of it. You're keeping, you know, secondary home purchases out of it. Just help the homeowners themselves. You have more people transitioning into housing. It would reduce the pressure on the rental market and also have a corresponding effect on keeping our core inflation down. You know, so it would be a good thing, but, you know, I'm just a lonely realtor in Reading.
Just a caveman. I don't understand these things.
I don't understand these things. So,
well, okay. So I don't know how much time we have left, but
like a minute or two.
We got a minute. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, then I wanted to talk about commercial because I didn't really understand commercial. So we're going to have to say this for next time about the whole how's the commercial rate track with the residential rate? And then the fact that, yeah, you might...
It doesn't track with it.
It doesn't track at all?
No, it's terrible.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Because I was wondering what that's going to do. And also that whole idea of the commercial rate about how, yeah, it's amortized over maybe 25 or 30 years, but it's due in 5 or 10. You know, that's kind of a different kind of concept. And I wanted to go over what's the logic behind that, you know, like why? Why would... But that's... I think that's way too long for a minute.
Yeah. How much time do we have, Anthony? 2 or 3 minutes, I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
We'll see if
let's go for it.
All right, we'll see if we can get it. So on the commercial side, you're right. Normally you're gonna see a 5 to 7 year fixed on their mortgage on commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. So it's normally amortized over 25 years, and then it normally has a 5 to 7 year maturity, okay? Their interest rates are much more tied to that, to the Federal Reserve's discount rate. It has a lot more to do with it. And if you guys are wondering, well, what's the difference? Well, when the mortgage-backed securities were being purchased by the Federal Reserve, that was almost a separate market than the Federal Reserve's discount rate.
Yes.
Okay. And right now, obviously, they're very similar in terms of, you know, what the mortgage rate is on the housing side and what the Federal Reserve's discount rate is. But on the commercial side, I mean, we're hearing quotes that are anywhere on the low of maybe 8.5% on the high of 10.
That's,
yeah, it's tough, right? And it's shorter term debt. They might have a few other options they can look at, like interest only. You know, if they have a large down, they could do interest only payments and things like that. But there's a balloon payment in 5 to 7 years that a lot of them are facing. And we have commercial buildings locally and a lot in the state of California that are coming due.
And they're empty.
And they're empty already.
That's going to be tough. I wonder what's going to happen to that market. What's going to happen to all those people that have it due? The rate is insane, and they don't have renters. I mean, that's kind of the word that flashes in my mind is bankruptcy, you know what I mean? Like, what does that mean? Like,
well, the banks are ultimately likely going to have to take those products back, and when they do, they'll have to sell them at today's fair market value. And depending on whether or not that was a non-recourse loan or not, the investor that owns that building will have to make that decision. But a lot of the folks up here in our county that own commercial buildings, they have their own name on the line too. You know, when you think about institutional investing, you know, buying big skyrise buildings in San Francisco or whatever, a lot of those, you know, there's a veil between their personal assets and that investment itself.
Yes.
In this situation, a lot of folks here in town, you know, they own a building, they have a business, their name is on the line for that mortgage payment. And if they don't make it, they're gonna likely have the building get sold in foreclosure. And there's a potential, significant potential for some recourse.
I'd like us to talk about that next month and just maybe some impact if you can get some numbers and stuff like that. Because I feel like that's about to hit Reading, hit it everywhere. But I think how's it? Because I can think of several people I know that own a small business and they are one of the units in like a 5-unit commercial.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So it's not just.
And that's a little bit of a different situation. So let's say my building's already full. Right. And that's great. It's full. No problem. I'm collecting in $10,000 a month. My mortgage on it was, you know, $13,000 a month. Right. And I was collecting I was collecting $10,000 and my mortgage was only $8,000.
Okay.
Okay. And the bank was fine. But now that I'm going to refinance it, the bank's saying, no. If you're collecting $10,000 a month, we're going to want to see that your debt service is maybe, you know, $6,500 to $7,000 a month.
And at the interest rate going up to possibly 10%, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. So they can't refinance it at today's rates based on what they had it on before. They can't, you know, the debt service ratio is all out of whack. And so they're forced to come in. It's like a cash call, basically. They have to come in with money, pay down that principal balance enough that when they refinance to the new rate, it meets that formula.
Yeah.
And very, very hard to do right now. Extremely hard to do.
So that's on the horizon. Well, I think that's all the time we have. And so Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays, right?
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Man. Yeah. So I'll see you next year.
All right.
Thank you, Josh.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Have a good one.
Take care.
If you're enjoying the All Things Real Estate podcast, please feel free to subscribe, rate, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. That helps others find the show, and we really appreciate it. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.